Live from the birthplace of Mr. Magoo in Marionette, Wisconsin, it's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour 2026. 30 minutes of no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, author, inventor, philosopher, the first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the longtime legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, a man who boldly goes where no man has gone before, Richard J. Ringhausen. And welcoming back a special guest, well-known song and dance man, the new overseer of the Bridge of Death, and self-taught herpetologist, a man who never turns down an arm wrestling challenge, Gregory J. Johnson. And marksman, sculptor, daredevil, the seven-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, a man who would have saved Lincoln's life if he had been there, the youngest of the Ringhausen brothers and star of your show, Alan J. Ringhausen.
Woo!
Yeah.
You know how I would have saved Lincoln?
Ow.
I would have pushed Wilkes Booth off the balcony.
Right off, before you even had
come
a chance.
Up right behind him, just as he's aiming, just pushing right over the rail.
That's kind
of what, hit Mary Todd.
That's kind of what you did with your wife at Niagara Falls. It's good enough. It's the hottest mic in the room.
I don't think it is.
Stop messing with
it. Oh, trust me, it is.
Okay, then.
So, Johnson, you kind of giggled like a schoolgirl when you heard the theme music.
Yeah.
I thought you was going to tell me when you squealing like a schoolgirl over tending the Bridge of Death. They haven't started calling that hardened bridge the Bridge of Death yet, have
about
they?
About 25 years ago.
No, not any time recently.
You know how people have recurring dreams? You know, like I'll have, when I was a little kid, I used to
wolves.
Wolves, you know, like I'm being chased by wolves and I'm running towards, you know, like the house, and I never get any closer to the house, but the wolves are getting closer to me.
Right.
They never, you know, attack me and kill me. But so I have that as a recurring dream. I used to have, as a little kid, recurring dreams about falling in a cistern in the front yard.
Really?
Yeah, because there was like no rail, no protection. And then the other recurring dream that I have is crossing the hardened bridge while it's covered with ice and no railings.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's the Bridge of Death for me.
I can dig that.
Johnson, if he stays there long enough and, you know, like, dies while tending the bridge, it would literally be the Bridge of Death for him.
If somebody dies up in that,
that's tough.
Somebody dies up in that bridge tender's room, right? In the hardened bridge.
It's in the up position. What are you going to do?
For people who don't know,
lower the bridge would be the first thing.
Harden's got a lift span bridge across the Illinois River.
Highest lift span in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, whatever. And it's got a little control room where there's someone that sits in there doing nothing but reading comic books all day and then pushes the up or down button depending on whether there's
ejects.
A barge coming. Right. And my question is, if someone dies in there, do you just kind of roll them into the corner and bring up a new guy, or do you clean the place
out? You open the window
out?
First.
Oh, man. I'm going to tell you, it takes the state of Illinois a long time to hire somebody, so you won't just replace them right away.
They have to have, you know, the state of Illinois puts a plan together for everything there is, so there has to be some kind of emergency bridge operator replacement plan.
Well, ever since elevators in modern buildings stopped using guys to push the button and you just do it yourself, there's a real shortage of people.
Third floor, please.
That now.
Third floor, please.
You got anything to say for yourself?
No, I'm staying out of this.
We love analyzing your job.
Because we both know we can do it.
I thought you were going to say because both of our lives are so boring that we can.
Oh, that too.
You could do it, but at the bottom, of the walkway, there's a sign that says "Authorized Personnel Only."
And well, that changes everything. I have not authorized
either of you.
I thought I thought the sign at the bottom of that little room says "No Beans."
You remember in The Jerk when the guy that was trying to kill him?
You're not authorized personnel. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
He's not authorized personnel.
That was the Lonely Repair, Maytag Repair. No, a different guy. But, you know, same guy.
I know you mean same.
Okay, before we get into our topic.
Yeah.
Last, how long ago was Easter? We haven't talked about what
happened. About 2 months ago.
What happened on Easter. Here, at the upper level of the studios, we had gathered together
the living quarters of the studios.
The okay. House and family. For the big Easter event, and we, in honor of Easter, we're watching religious films, and we watched Ben-Hur. Ever seen Ben-Hur?
Seen it.
Fantastic movie.
Well, I think it's one of the greatest films ever made. It had the most Oscar nominations record for a long time.
Titanic, I think, bumped it.
Yeah, I think it was Titanic finally bumped it out, but for, you know, decades it held that title. And, you know, there's some director had the audacity to try and remake Ben-Hur.
Yeah, why would like you there's make a the, point to that.
Yeah, you know, setting the bar for you. But there's a scene in Ben-Hur where, you know, Ben-Hur has this nemesis. What is the guy's name?
Masala. The most evil guy that's ever been on film.
Yeah, yeah. And as he's dying after he got ran over by multiple chariots and horses.
Masala got run Masala over. Masala, the bad guy.
And he's laying there in pain waiting for Ben-Hur to show up.
And they're trying to decide whether to cut his leg off for him, right?
Right, amputate his legs.
No, wait, he'll come!
And so Ben-Hur shows up, and even though Masala is dying, he tells Ben-Hur that it's not over because his mother and sister are alive and living in the Valley of Lepers. And at this emotional scene, Rick just bursts out laughing. Look at that! His wife walks in. Why are you laughing at this part of this film?
I was just...
It's hilarious.
I was just struck at how ruthlessly cruel this guy is, that he's using his one last breath. I mean, Ben-Hur is there to forgive him.
Right. Right.
Old friend, I'm sorry it had to end this way. Yeah, well, your wife and your sister and mother are lepers. It's like a Simon Legree type laugh.
Is that what it was? You were laughing in the face of horror.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that and let you know who you're sitting next to here, Craig.
Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah, he knows.
All right. Proceed.
Okay.
Oh, wait, we're out of time.
Okay. What was the theme song played there?
That'd be number 6.
What was that?
The Great Escape. The
Great Escape.
You ever watch that movie?
I did watch that movie. That's also a great movie.
It's a really long movie.
But that's a true, absolutely 100% true story.
Exactly. Every word of it.
Every word. It was taken from transcripts. But they actually built like 3 big ass tunnels. Like Tom, Dick, and Harry. Yeah, not just satisfied with building one colossal tunnel, but they built 3 of them just in case the other ones... One of them got discovered and they abandoned the 3rd one, I think.
You know, what I found a little upsetting about it, I think, was... You know, most of the main characters got caught or killed.
Yeah. Well, any insight?
Didn't bother you? Is that what we're here to talk about? First, you're going to laugh at Ben-Hur. Now you're...
Now, I'm surprised you didn't laugh about that.
Yeah.
There he goes.
Did you laugh when Bambi's mom got shot?
No, I just imagined in my mind that it's you with the rifle.
Okay. Venison.
Okay, here's the thing that strikes me about The Great Escape. You know, like I said, true story.
Right.
And like a whole bunch of guys escaped out of part, or made it out anyway, what, 100 and some odd of them?
Yep.
And they caught almost all of them. There was a handful that got away.
Right. James Coburn.
Yeah. And well, Charles that's Bronson. In the movie. Yeah. But, Some of the leads did not make it. My question was, since there's some people that made it and some didn't, why wouldn't you let all the guys you're rooting for make it? Like James Garner and the blind guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was sad.
Get so close and then don't make it? I mean, where's some do? I mean, I would think that all your leads should escape. Other than Steve McQueen, who I can see they had to put him back. Because right. they had to give bookends to the movie.
He's good on that motorcycle, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was. All right. Alcatraz. We're talking about...
I think you should...
Yeah, what's the theme? Tell him the theme.
The theme is Great Escapes. Like our theme song coming in. It's
escapes.
Down through history, people who have made, you know, like daring, unbelievable escapes.
Like the Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic escape.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, you know, it's fake.
Right.
Yeah, I understand.
But what we're talking about here...
The real deal escapes.
The real thing.
Yeah.
Are we only talking about the real thing?
Yeah.
Because Shawshank was a hell of a
story. Shawshank was a good escape, too.
Andy Dufresne brought you a river.
If I can't even imagine.
How many football fields was that?
Alcatraz. I'm going to talk about Alcatraz.
Okay, go ahead.
Frank Morris and brothers John and Clarence Anglin executed a meticulously planned escape from Alcatraz. Using homemade tools, they widened the ventilation ducts in their cells, created an unguarded utility corridor. They crafted dummy heads from plaster, fresh tone paint, and real human hair to deceive the night guards. And they, on the night of June 11th, 1962, they ascended to the roof, launched a makeshift raft constructed from over 50 raincoats, and vanished into the waters of San Francisco Bay. They have never been found, and there's no record as to whether or not they actually even made it ashore.
Now, one of the three supposedly sent really a
escape?
Letter.
Did they escape? I mean, they got outside
the prison wall.
What
Johnson's about to say, though.
Okay.
So one of them sent a letter from somewhere. I guess he said he was the last one alive. He was 83. And the FBI did fingerprint and DNA analysis on the letter, and it came back inconclusive. And there was also a picture of the two brothers that appeared at some point, and that was also inconclusive as to whether it was them or not.
It was a picture of them with, like, showgirls on each arm.
No, it was... in a desert or something, a big rock between
them. Cool Hand
Luke. Okay.
Also a great escape movie.
That's also a good escape movie.
Why 50?
You know, I think the movies are a lot better than...
49 or 48.
50 just seemed like a nice round number.
What'd you say, Alan?
I said what we have here...
Oh, yeah.
...is
failure to communicate.
Bilingually. Strother Martin made an appearance on Saturday Night Live, and
yeah, I know.
Okay,
where he's running a French language camp.
Yeah, French camp,
indeed. All right, who else you got?
You're gonna want to talk about El Chapo, right?
Yeah. What about El Chapo?
It seems he's hard to keep imprisoned.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that second time,
El Chapo. Who's El Chapo?
He was a pretty bad guy from Mexico. Uh-oh.
Hold it. Do you hear that?
Sound like the phone was ringing.
Don't we turn our phones off during this?
I don't know. Answer that.
Hello?
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 Hello? Get that!
Turn the phone off!
It's almost like it's a phone.
You got it?
What's going on here?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Hello?
Doyle?
This is Doyle McIntyre, owner and operator of Amalgamated Murgatroyd, your hometown explosive super center. Is there anyone there?
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay.
What's happening?
Well... summer is here now, and that is a good time to go through your supply of old dynamite. Is there a pool of gel puddled at the bottom of your dynamite crate that smells fruity? Well, that is a bad thing, and it means that your sticks of dynamite are leaching out their nitroglycerin, which is very dangerous. You should not just wipe it up with a wash rag or snot rag, but should call us. We will send out an ATF-certified explosive specialist with Class 2 pyrotechnical removal license, who will professionally remove the compromised product and safely bury it in the woods. Then you can come down to our newly renovated storeroom and stock up on fresh dynamite and blasting caps, which we have in abundance. Come on down to Amalgamated Murgatroyd. We're located right across the street from St. Boniface Middle School Playground.
You getting ready for the build-up to 4th of July?
4th of July is our busy season.
Are you open on the 4th?
We celebrate God in America. Thank you.
Let me ask you this. Do you deliver, like if I sent a request and asked you to deliver it to my home, will you ship?
We do not mail product because you don't know if it's a terrorist ordering it.
Very good point. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
All right. Did I ever tell you my explosive story?
No.
Bought a building. It's been years back. We were cleaning out.
We'll talk about El Chapo in a minute here, apparently.
I was, like cleaning off some shelves, some lower shelves, like a workbench and underneath. And in the back of it, there's a wooden box. It's all covered with dust. I pull it out, set it on the bench. It was nailed shut. And I pry it open. It's full of blasting caps.
Ah, that's it.
The real thing. And, Craig, you're probably too young to remember the blasting cap commercials.
The public service announcement.
Public service announcement you have on TV on Saturday.
Of blasting caps, and it shows kids reaching for them and big explosion pictures.
For real.
See one of these laying on the ground? Don't touch it. But it would have, a kid's hand reaching for it and then just an explosion,
And it's an explosion like the atomic bomb going off.
Right. So I knew what they were, right away. Ooh, blasting caps. And I thought,
I had to go get a hammer.
I thought, man, I better dispose of these properly, right?
Were they leaching nitroglycerin?
So I call the sheriff's department and say, hey, I got some blasting caps down here at the harbor, and I think I need to get rid of them.
I'll bet that set off a...
They're like, are you sure? I said, pretty darn sure. And they said, okay, the Illinois Secretary of State Bomb Squad is in charge of disposing of explosive materials. And he said, they have...
And they're just sitting in a room waiting for someone
to
call.
No, they have a training session going on over at Collinsville right now. They could come and get them.
Perfect.
I said, that'd be great. And I told them where I was at, and they said, we'll contact them and tell them that to come on up and that you'll be there. I said, yeah, that's fine. I got a meeting a little long, and... So it turns out that I was trying to rent out a building, like a big office building at the time, and I had a group of fluvial geomorphologists.
What's that mean? Thank you.
These are guys who study the river systems. They're like scientists.
All right.
And they were coming in to look at this building to possibly rent it and set it up as a research center on the Mississippi River, right? Fluvial geomorphologists. So... I'm working in the shed, still cleaning it out, and about this time, the fluvial geomorphologists show up at the harbor and start pulling in. There's 6 or 8, maybe 10 of them, and they're all standing around on the parking lot, and I'm talking to them, telling them about the building and stuff. And about this time, 3 black SUVs come flying into the parking lot.
All right.
And these guys get out of the vehicles.
Were they all wearing sunglasses?
They were wearing bomb suits.
Oh, even better.
They were bomb suits. And the first guy steps out. He's in the full gear. He says,
"Somebody got a ghost?"
Says, "We're looking for Allie Ringhausen."
And your people standing there.
Here I am. They're all like,
oh. Is he dressed like from the Hurt Locker?
I said, just hang on just a few minutes, guys. You can go on in the building if you want.
But call someone if I don't come back.
But I got to go get rid of some explosives right now. And the guy... he says, "What do you got?" He said, "You got the reds?" I said, "What?" He said, there's 2 major types of blasting caps. The reds, they're not a problem. Not a big deal. They're not much worse than a firecracker." He said, "You got the yellows? You got to really be careful. Those are pretty powerful, pretty dangerous stuff." And I said, it's neither of these are blue. Oh, my God, we haven't seen blue ones in years. And brought out this special box to put them in and then took them to the back of the property and exploded them.
I thought you were saying buried them.
No.
They didn't take them with them.
No, they said.
I guess they wouldn't do that, would they? That seems
not
dangerous.
So much.
You hit them around. All right.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. What was I talking about?
El Chapo.
El Chapo.
Big drug.
It's El Chapo, isn't it?
I thought Chapo. So.
I don't know. Who knows?
I think in this Hispanics,
yeah. The A is an ah. Ah, A, E, O. El Burro Sabe Mosque, too. But they busted him several times and imprisoned him, found him guilty, off to prison you go.
Yep.
And they, like, got him out. Apparently he has a whole army of flunkies that are dedicated to getting him out.
He's got some good diggers.
Apparently.
No doubt.
That tunnel was a click and a half long. What is that, almost a mile or a little over a mile long?
Yeah, Craig, for, you know, non-military
a click. I know I got that too. Wasn't that cool? Having a military guy.
I have no idea what the hell a click is.
A kilometer.
A kilometer. That's a click.
A click. I guess. So,
okay, again, we're non-military and we're American. We don't talk in kilometers.
He was just speaking Spanish.
Poorly.
Yeah.
Okay, El Chapo, when he got out, like Craig said, his flunkies dug a tunnel a mile long.
And that's impressive.
They started
that
like,
is really impressive.
They started like some old barn that's, you know, a mile away from the prison, and they dug to where they came up in the shower, apparently, and built like a big hatch.
I don't understand how they accurately would have come up into his shower stall, but they did.
Yeah,
and he went into the shower. 25 minutes later, the guards went, hey. That's the only place that's not on camera. And the guards went, hey, we haven't seen him for 25 minutes. And they went in there, and I guess there was a hole in the shower floor, and he was gone.
I'm thinking if you're a prison guard, any time you do a check anywhere and there's a hole in the wall, you're going, oh, my God, I'm going to have to answer for this.
That's a right there, man, when you see the hole in the wall.
Okay. Do you have to use that terminology when we're talking about prison?
We will not. We will not be. But that was the third time that guy escaped from three different prisons.
Right. I also think it's interesting that Mexican prisons have a shower stall in the room. That's pretty nice.
You know, here's what I don't understand. If a guy's escaped three times, why isn't he chained to the wall and just hose him off?
Yeah.
I think you'd have to get medieval on a guy like that.
By medieval,
you mean, chain him to the wall.
Oh, I thought you meant like a pair of pliers and a blowtorch.
Some pipe hitters, huh?
Pasco Paya escaped by helicopter, a French criminal. Three times he escaped from prison via helicopter.
Wow.
Those French aren't looking up, are they?
And the last line of this one says, these audacious escapes forced authorities to reevaluate aerial security measures in French prisons.
You think?
I would think after the first one. You know, the second time.
Why is he getting out of his cell?
Hey, Marcel Marceau's sitting up on top of the roof again, sunning himself. Should we allow that or somebody put a stop to that? Well, I was guarding him, but he sent me to get some brie.
Facilitated the escape.
Well, I mean,
the same prison using the same method. They might really drop the ball there, didn't they?
Indeed. All right, Johnson, you're up.
T.B. Cooper. That's one of the. I mean, it's low on this list, man, but it's one of the most famous ones.
Yeah, T.B. Cooper.
Yeah, but did he really escape?
I think so. Just him and a parachute and $200,000.
They found a big chunk of the money, like, rotting in the forest to near where he supposedly jumped out of an airplane.
Which just tells me he was a, you know, like a bear snack.
Yeah.
He didn't make it or something. Like he.
I can't imagine.
Guy broke his leg, parachuting down. Bears ate him and left the money. Period. There you go. D.B. Cooper.
So they must have been rich
make
bears.
Make that a movie.
To not take the money.
And, that's right. They didn't need it.
Yeah.
Pretty well to do.
That's pretty brash, though, to jump out of a, like an airliner. You know, you got to really trust your parachuting ability if you're going to jump out of an airliner.
Right.
He probably had a military background.
He looked out the window and said, man, that's about six clicks to the ground.
I got to go.
You know, when our brother Brad is on the show and he gets upset with Rick, he punches him.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Try not to pinch Brad too much. John Dillinger. Alan, talk about John Dillinger.
Have you watched the movie?
No.
You've not seen the movie Dillinger?
No. Have you?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
And he escapes in it?
Yes, he does. And they play out the whole fake gun thing that...
So tell how Dillinger escaped.
He carved out a gun, the shape of a gun, out of a bar of soap. And then shoe polished it brown. And when the guard came through, he held the gun up to him, took the guard's gun then, and they brought in the warden, and he escaped with the warden and one of the guards. And and in the movie, he robs a bank the same day he got out of prison.
All right.
How big were the bars of soap back in Dillinger's day?
That's a great question.
Because that seems like... I don't know. It seems like a small gun.
Yeah, but you got Midnight Special, man. They're not very big.
They didn't have Midnight Special, Tim. Did they? Dillinger, you're talking the 20s.
They had little guns back then.
Two-shot Derringer, but that might give you a nasty infection.
Oh, here. Dillinger, it says in the real life story, he carved it from a block of wood.
Oh, yeah, because they always leave wood laying around in your cell. Yeah,
who wouldn't have wood in their cell, right? I'm trying to think. Who was it that played his character in the movie? It was the same guy that played the sergeant in Stripes.
Bill Murray movie?
Yeah. Who was that?
John Candy.
It was not John Candy.
PJ Souls.
No, but she was in the movie.
Yeah, she was. Okay.
Uncle Hulka?
I'm derailed.
Sergeant Hulka.
Yeah.
He was Dillinger.
John Candy called him Uncle Hulka. Heat of the Night. He was one of the cops in Heat of the Night.
The one that got falsely accused and arrested?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He's been in like a million movies. Okay, go on. Choose another one.
The actor Alan is trying to remember is Warren Oates.
The car and Debru escape in Brazil in 2001. A riot and ensuing violence at São Paulo's penitentiary enabled at least 100 prisoners to escape.
Warren Oates, the guy I couldn't think of. Warren Oates.
No,
played Dillinger in the Dillinger
movie.
You're
thinking of War and Peace. The chaos drew global attention to Britain's prison issues and led to calls for reform. It was one of the most notorious prisons in South America at the time.
Which one's that?
That Brazil one, number 8.
The
yeah, whatever.
Okay. That was in 2001. I don't remember it creating an international uproar.
I mean,
global attention? Nobody called me.
You know, and there's...
Alec, wake up. Wake up. There's been a prison break in Brazil. Wake
you know,
up.
You know... You know, you hear about prison riots, you know, and generally, you know, they're running amok inside the prison. And,
Attica!
But they're, you know, there's a million cops around it. It's pretty rare that there's a riot. And
they're still in there.
And people just go pouring out in every direction.
Yeah. They may be making some bathtub beer for a couple of days, but yeah, they're still in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get a big prison riot like that, you think the cops are on the outside, like... Let them go. They'll find their own level.
All right. We're getting close to time, but let me ask this of each of you. What's what's the biggest escape you personally were involved with? Like skipping class or?
Are you asking?
Have you personally ever escaped from a dangerous situation?
Oh, I don't know if it's dangerous or not, but when I was in high school...
He slipped out of the house without telling Sarah.
When I was in high school, they had, at the time, they were, you know, like tearing down part of the high school and building a new high school at the time. And the vice principal selected me and three other guys to go out during our lunch hour and pick up trash that was being created because the kids were parking their cars, you know, like off campus and on streets. Yeah. So it's our job to go out and pick up trash. And what we were doing was hopping in a car, driving as fast as we could out to Fielden, where they would sell beer to minors and spend the entire drinking beer instead of being at school. I have never told that to anybody.
Mom and Dad don't listen to the podcast,
anyway,
right?
We got caught.
And returned to your cell.
Yeah.
How about you, Johnson? Biggest escape you ever successfully got away.
Well, it wasn't really any of my doing, but I was scheduled to go, when I was active duty, scheduled to go to Saudi Arabia. And
that's about 1,500 clicks away.
Yeah, probably more than that. And I ended up going.
When did you start spelling escape A-W-O-L?
I ended up not going. I ended up getting out, and the guy that took my place got hurt in the Khobar Towers bombing where they brought that van up close to the...
Oh, so you,
oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
you,
yeah.
You dodged a bullet.
I dodged a bullet.
Literally.
Yeah.
Dodged a bullet. Interesting.
Oh, what about you?
Huh? Where did you ever escape from?
Working? No, I was driving one of the trucks that we had out on the orchard, and the door wouldn't open. The handle was broken, and I couldn't get out.
And after you cried like a little girl for 3 hours, what'd you do?
No, I there was a vice grip that you used to turn the knob to make it
open. Yeah, I remember that truck.
But it had dropped down inside the quarter panel of the truck, and I couldn't reach it, and couldn't get the door to open. Finally, I was able to take some other tool that was there, and by keeping torque pressure on it, was able to turn enough and then kick the door open with my feet.
That's interesting. Do you try any of the other doors? Vans generally have more.
Yeah, the other side was open.
Is this over? Are we done?
I didn't get around to telling about the time I was trapped in an elevator. That'd be another story.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. We're out of time, Rick.
Let's go. See you later, Rick Gator.
Crocodile.
And alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that little bit of legal business in hand, see you later from Rick Gator, Crocodile, and Alligator. This has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production, except no substitute. Are you ready? 'Cause there aren't any.